Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're plunging into a question that, well, it sounds simple on the surface, but it's actually like a key unlocking millennia of human thought. Imagine this scenario. You've got a fantasy writer, username Techiedad over on Reddit, and he's hit a bit of a creative wall. He's building his world, see, and needs opposites for the four classical elements: earth, air, fire, and water. He'd already figured, okay, fire's opposite is darkness because, you know, fire makes light. Makes sense. But then what about air and water? He was sort of fishing for ideas, maybe vacuum for air, or I don't know, salt for water.
It's a great question for world building, isn't it? But it immediately makes you think, well, what are the true opposites, if they even exist in that way? Because as soon as you start pulling on that thread, you find yourself diving into, well, ancient philosophy, mythology, esoteric traditions. People have been grappling with this for centuries.
Exactly. And that's our mission today. We're taking Techiedad's creative challenge as our starting point for a real deep dive. We're going to unpack the whole concept of the classical elements. Where did they come from? How did different cultures see them? And maybe most intriguingly, how has this idea of opposites been explored and maybe redefined? We'll touch on sources from that Reddit thread all the way back to ancient texts like the Kabbalion. We're aiming to find some powerful insights here. Okay, so let's start way back. Ancient Greece, we're talking Empedocles, 5th century BCE. He's often the guy credited with first formally proposing these four roots, earth, air, fire, water, as like the basic stuff everything's made of. But crucially, these weren't just, you know, dead materials to him.
Not at all. That's key. Empedocles gave them a kind of spiritual weight. He actually linked them to Greek gods Zeus, Hera, Aidoneus, Nestus. So they were seen as fundamental forces, almost divine in nature.
And he didn't stop there, right? He had these two cosmic forces moving everything around.
Yes. Love, Philotes, bringing things together, creating mixtures. And strife, Nikos, pulling them apart, causing separation. He pictured the whole universe working through this cycle, these elements mixing and unmixing under the influence of love and strife. He even had these wild ideas about how life formed, you know, limbs wandering around and then joining up plants and animals springing from the earth because of fire. It was ambitious.
It really was. And what's amazing, thinking back, is that this was one of the first big attempts to explain everything using natural principles, not just saying the gods did it. Mm-hmm. Like his simple observation, you turn a bowl upside down in water, air gets trapped. So air must be something, a distinct substance. That's a real aha moment in history.
Absolutely. A move towards systematic explanation. And building on that, we get to Aristotle. Maybe a century later, in the 4th century BCE, he really took these ideas and ran with them, refining the system.
He did indeed. Aristotle's the one who added the fifth element, right? Aether.
Exactly. Aether was, for the heavens, this perfect, unchanging substance, different from the four terrestrial elements. And for those four, earth, air, fire, water, he assigned specific qualities, two for each. So fire was hot and dry, air was hot and wet, water, cold and wet, and earth. Cold and dry.
Yeah, that diamond diagram too, didn't he? To show how they relate.
Yeah, the diagram's brilliant. It shows connections like water and air sharing the quality wet. You see that in rain. Water and earth sharing cold, maybe think of mud. But it also shows the direct opposites. Water is cold and wet. Fire is hot and dry. Completely opposed. Air, hot, wet, is opposite earth. Cold, dry.
And that explained how things could change, how transmutation worked.
Precisely. You could change one element to another if they shared a quality, just change the other quality. Like fire, hot, dry, could become air, hot, wet, if you swap dryness for wetness while keeping the hot quality. But changing two qualities at once, like turning water, cold, wet, directly into fire, hot, dry, that was seen as much harder, maybe impossible.
Wow. And this framework, this way of thinking, it stuck around for ages, didn't it?
Oh, massively. It influenced Western thought science, medicine, alchemy for nearly 2,000 years. People use it to explain everything from chemical reactions to, believe it or not, things like eye color. It was a hugely influential paradigm.
Incredible. But even then, there were other ways of thinking about it. Plato, for instance, had a completely different take. More geometric.
Yeah, Plato went full geometry. He linked each element to one of the Platonic solids, those perfect 3D shapes. Fire was the tetrahedron, think pyramid, sharpest angles, most mobile. Earth was the stable cube. Air got the octahedron, and water the icosahedron. And his cool idea was that fire, air, and water could sort of transform into each other because their shapes were all made from the same basic triangles. But earth, made of squares, was fundamentally different, harder to change into the others. Just a totally different mathematical perspective.
So we got from these philosophical building blocks to something more mathematical with Plato.
Yeah.
But then the elements start to take on personalities almost, moving into myth and, well, the occult.
Exactly. This is where figures like Paracelsus come in around the 16th century. He's famous for really developing the idea of elementals. These are like supernatural beings tied to each element.
The gnomes, undines, sylphs, and salamanders.
Those are the ones. Gnomes for earth, undines for water, sylphs for air, and salamanders for fire. And Paracelsus had a very specific view. He thought they were actual physical beings, usually invisible to us, looked sort of human, but this is the really interesting bit, they didn't have immortal souls like humans do.
No souls, that's quite a concept. So how did they fit into the world? Could they interact with us?
Well, according to Paracelsus, they could gain a soul by marrying a human. Which sounds a bit like a medieval fantasy plot, doesn't it? He described them too. Gnomes were short, lived underground, moved through earth easily. Sylphs were longer, moved through air. Undines in water, salamanders in fire. Each lived in its own element, its own chaos, as he called it, but couldn't survive in the others.
You can totally see how this captures the imagination. It literally gives the elements character. No wonder it influenced literature and pops up. Even now you mentioned the DC Comics team, the Elementals.
Absolutely. These ideas really resonated. And Paracelsus wasn't alone. Agrippa, around the same time, also wrote about four classes of spirits tied to the elements. And later books, like the Comte de Galis, really popularized the whole elemental marriage idea. Some groups, like the Rosicrucians, even claim that through purification and chastity, you could learn to see elementals, and marrying one was a path to immortality.
Wild stuff. But what strikes me is how, well, universal this impulse seems to be classifying nature's forces, though the details change everywhere you look.
That's a crucial point. While the Greeks had their four, you see similar ideas independently pop up elsewhere. China has five elements, Japan has five, Hindu traditions have five, various African cosmologies like the Bokongo have their own systems. The drive is there, but the categories differ.
And the nature of those elements or spirits can be totally different too.
Exactly. Take Jainism, for example. They have a concept called Ekhendriya Jiva, which are one-sense beings. Superficially, it sounds a bit like elementals. But here's the twist. In Jainism, these beings include things like rocks, water, fire, wind. The physical elements themselves are considered to possess souls. It's almost the complete opposite of Paracelsus's soulless elementals. It just shows the incredible range of human thought on this.
Okay, so we've seen philosophy, geometry, myth. This brings us to another angle, one that might hold, well, maybe not the answer to Techie Dad's question, but a powerful way to reframe it. We're talking Hermeticism.
Right. The teachings attributed to Hermes Trismegistus, the thrice great Hermes, often seen as a combination of the Greek god Hermes and the Egyptian god Thoth. He's considered this legendary founder of occult wisdom, alchemy, astrology, the master of masters.
And the core ideas are summed up in the Kabbalion. Now, alchemy here isn't just about turning lead into gold, is it?
No, not primarily. Hermetic alchemy is really focused on mental transmutation. It's about changing your own mental states, your vibrations. The idea of the philosopher's stone is often interpreted as an allegory for achieving this inner mastery, not just, you know, literal gold making.
So the Kabbalion lays out these seven hermetic principles. Let's maybe quickly run through the first few to set the scene. Number one is mentalism.
Correct. Mentalism. The all is mind. The universe is mental. Basically, everything that exists, the entire universe, is held within the mind of this ultimate reality, the all.
Okay, then correspondence. As above, so below. As below, so above.
Yeah, this implies a harmony, an analogy between different planes of existence.
Yeah.
Patterns repeat. What happens on a large scale might be reflected on a small scale and vice versa.
And third, vibration. Nothing rests, everything moves, everything vibrates.
This one's key. It says that differences between things matter, energy, even mind, are just differences in their rate of vibration. Everything's in constant motion.
Right. Now, the fourth principle, this seems really relevant to our opposites question, the principle of polarity.
Ah, yes, polarity. This is where it gets fascinating for Techie Dad's dilemma. The principle states, everything is dual, everything has poles, everything has its pair of opposites, like and unlike are the same. Opposites are identical in nature, but different in degree, extremes meet, all truths are but half-truths, all paradoxes may be reconciled.
Wow. Okay. Unpack that. Opposites are identical in nature, but different in degree. What does that actually mean?
It means that things we think of as complete opposites are actually just two extremes of the same exact thing. They exist on a single spectrum, differing only in their position, their degree, or vibration on that spectrum.
So
like heat and cold. The Kabbalion uses this example. Are they two fundamentally different things? No, says Hermeticism. They are both just degrees of temperature, which is ultimately vibration. There's no absolute point where heat stops and cold begins on a thermometer. It's a continuum. Same for light and darkness. They're poles of the same phenomenon, radiant energy, vibration. Darkness is just a very low degree of light vibration.
Okay, I see. And even emotions, like love and hate.
Same principle applies. They're considered identical in nature. Intense emotional states just differing in polarity and degree. And crucially, because they're on the same spectrum, you can potentially transmute one into the other by changing its polarity, by shifting the mental vibration.
This completely reframes Techie Dad's original problem. He thought fire's opposite was darkness because fire creates light.
Mm-hmm.
But polarity suggests light and darkness aren't separate opponents. They're two ends of the same spectrum of light energy vibration.
Exactly. Darkness is the absence or lowest degree of light. It's not a separate thing opposing it. And similarly, maybe vacuum isn't the opposite of air in a confrontational sense, but rather the extreme low end on a spectrum of density or presence of matter.
It dissolves the idea of needing a distinct thing as an opposite. It's more about degrees on a scale.
Precisely. And just quickly, the other principles build on this. Rhythm describes the natural ebb and flow in everything. Cause and effect states that nothing happens by chance. And gender posits masculine and feminine principles, not just physical sex, but creative energies existing in everything.
And understanding all this allows for that mental transmutation you mentioned.
That's the goal. By understanding these principles, especially vibration and polarity, the idea is you can consciously change your own mental states, shift from fear to courage, for example, by raising your mental vibration along that specific spectrum.
So the Kabbalion isn't just philosophy. It's kind of a user's manual for the mind.
You could definitely see it that way. A roadmap for self-mastery by understanding the mental and vibrational nature of reality, shifting your inner world to affect your experience of the outer world.
It's amazing how these ancient concepts still resonate. I mean, the classical elements themselves, even if we don't use them in physics anymore, they still kind of map onto our modern understanding, don't they?
They really do, in an intuitive way. Earth is basically solids, water is liquids, air is gases, fire. Well, it maps pretty well onto plasma, the fourth state of matter. The ancient Greeks were incredibly observant, even without modern tools. They laid a conceptual foundation.
And these ideas are definitely not just stuck in history books. Think about healing practices.
Oh, absolutely. Traditional systems like Tibetan medicine, Ayurveda from India, they still work heavily with elemental concepts. Balancing the elements within the body is key to health. Earth relates to structure, like bones, water to bodily fluids, fire to metabolism, digestion, air to breath, and movement. Holistic practitioners use these ideas today.
And in psychology too, right? Or personal growth stuff. Using elements as archetypes.
Yeah, that's really common. You hear about people having an earthy personality, stable, grounded, or fiery, passionate, energetic, watery, adaptable, emotional, airy, intellectual, communicative. It's a useful shorthand, a way to understand different facets of personality and even how people interact in relationships.
Which brings us right back around to Techie Dad and his fantasy world. It shows how powerful these concepts are for creativity. Elements, their qualities, their opposites or polarities, they're just such rich material for world building. Like that example you mentioned from Reddit, the Meta World Chronicles using quasi-elements like magma from Earth plus fire or void from negative plus air. It's taking these core ideas and playing with them, evolving them.
It really is. And beyond fiction, you see elements used actively in ritual and spiritual practice. Many nature-based traditions like Wicca or forms of shamanism consciously work with the elements. They might use physical symbols, a feather for air, a candle for fire, a bowl of water, a stone for earth to invoke their energies for balance, protection, or creating sacred space.
So it doesn't matter if you're a fantasy writer, someone exploring alternative healing, or just, you know, curious about different ways of seeing the world, these ancient ideas still offer a really potent lens.
Definitely. A lens for understanding both the world outside us and the world within us. #techtagoutro.
Wow. Okay. What a trip. We started with Techie Dad on Reddit trying to find opposites for fantasy elements. And that simple question took us all the way back to Empedocles and his divine roots through Aristotle's logic, Plato's geometry, Paracelsus's kind of weird but fascinating elementals, and landed us in the really deep waters of Hermetic philosophy.
It really shows that the concept of an opposite isn't straightforward at all. It depends entirely on the system, the framework you're using.
So thinking about Techie Dad again and just our general understanding, what's the big takeaway on opposites? That Hermetic principle of polarity seems key, doesn't it?
I think it offers the most, perhaps, mind-bending perspective. The idea that maybe we shouldn't be looking for a completely separate thing as an opposite. Instead, we might be looking at the other end of the same spectrum.
Right. Darkness isn't fighting light. It's just the near zero point of light's own scale. Vacuum isn't battling air. It's the lowest degree of density on that scale.
It shifts the whole dynamic from conflict to complementarity, existing along a single continuum.
Which leads us to, I guess, our final thought for you to chew on.
Yeah.
If polarity applies to elements like light and dark, heat and cold, what about other opposites in our lives? Think about things like joy and sorrow, success and failure, even concepts like good and evil. Are they truly distinct, warring forces?
Mm-hmm.
Or could they be two poles of the same underlying reality, differing only in degree and vibration? And if they are, could shifting our own perception, our own mental transmutation, change how we experience them? Something to ponder.
Definitely food for thought.
Join us next time for another deep dive.